Hello and welcome to The Mountain Pod, the podcast that discusses all things mountains. Now this week my guest is Owain George. Now Owain is a fantastic individual who, as you'll hear, has done many seasons up in the mountains. This season he hasn't returned to the mountains. He stayed in South Wales to focus on his new business venture, which is a zero waste mobile refill centre. Essentially, he's got himself a van and he drives around communities in South Wales, giving them the opportunity to fill up on all their goods without having to go to the shops and buy products with lots and lots of plastic packaging. It's a fantastic idea, and Owain can no doubt explain it much better than I just have. But what we'll do is I'll stick a link to it in the comments so you can go check it out. Now, Owain was and still is a very good snowboard instructor. And in his more recent winters, he became heavily involved with the climate change charity Protect Our Winters, who primarily lobby governments to fight the problems of climate change. We caught up in early December and we had a great chat. We talked about many things, from how we can affect change as individuals to the problems facing ski resorts and what our hopes for the future were. And we also reminisced about the events that we've jointly held at my bar. We helped him put on an event called Box Jam, which raises awareness for Protect Our Winters. And Owain himself puts on a very good event called the Bank Slalom at the end of the season, which is a friendly competition where you get to ride down a bank slalom course. It's a load of fun. I had a really good chat. Owain's a great guy, and it was just really good to talk to him about all these things, and it left me feeling quite positive at the end of it. So hopefully you'll enjoy the conversation, and I'll be back at the end.
Dare I ask, with the pandemic and Brexit and all these other things going on in terms of mountains, is it that you're having a break from being a snowboard instructor, or is it that you are, is this a forced change in career?
No, it's kind of, I've done like, I was trying to figure out the other day, I think in total 16 winter seasons around the world in various places and spread over like 25 years or something. And I spent quite a few of those years all year round in ski resorts as well. And I just got to an age that I was struggling with the season ending and then this big gap and then the summer not really bringing much in terms of what I do, in terms of my snowboard instructing. And it's a very short season. Like if you take team, for example, on the glacier, the opportunity isn't huge there to have work through the winter for me. So there's always this like coming to the end of the winter and having to think about what I need to be doing for the next few months and stuff. And the idea was that I want to live by the coast. I really getting into my surfing a lot. That's quite an important sport that I'm kind of developing in my own skill set at the moment, and I'm really into it, like I'm frothing on it like I did when I got into snowboarding. And so I bought a house here back in South Wales, right on the beach, like 30 seconds to the beach from the front door, so we can surf heaps. And the idea is to get a business that would run all year round and then allow me to still go to the mountains and instruct in the winters. But in the background, I still have this safety net of this business that's always there, always ticking over. I hope to eventually employ a full-time member of staff to work with me on the van. And then that person can operate it while I go out and teach my clients in the winter. Weirdly and ironically, decided to do it, obviously pre-COVID, not knowing that COVID was going to happen, but in a weird twist of fate, COVID has had loads of negative impacts on me, but the positive side of it, it seems to have been the right winter to have made that transition, because setting this business up, I was always going to take a hit on my first winter, and I knew that I probably wasn't going to get out much, if at all, to do any snowboarding and teaching. So it's kind of like on a selfish point of view, it means that through October, November, and December, I haven't been turning on my Instagram and looking at everyone getting face shots and like just having like a rad time, and I'm not there, you know. So it's kind of worked out weirdly quite well that this is the year to do the transition, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I'm happy for you, because I hear so many stories in the reverse of that where people have had a really tough year. When I hear someone that has a positive take on it, I'm really happy for them. That's great.
Yeah, it's positive. I guess it's quite selfish. So it's a bit unfair. Lots of people are suffering, but yeah.
No, I don't think it's selfish. I think it's great that you can you're using the time, and it took you to make that big jump to take a winter out. You know, it's very, I think you're right. I've been talking to a few people about this, how it's a very difficult format to work with, seasons.
Yeah.
In terms of keeping revenue coming in. And many people do many different things to try and address that balance.
Absolutely.
But eventually, I think it takes investment, not only with money, but time. So
yeah, nice, it takes a lot of thinking. Yeah, thanks, man. It's like, it's a lot of years of thinking what to do. And it was, don't get me wrong, like coming into this winter, I struggled because I worked really hard to get my qualification to be able to teach in France. And that was the first process of doing lots of seasons and thinking, I want to be in the mountains, but I don't want to do like, not menial work, but work that isn't progressing me, or I don't feel value in what I'm doing particularly. What do I need to do to change that? And I had already qualified as an instructor back in like 2002 as a lower level instructor, and I'd gone to New Zealand and Canada, and eventually I stopped doing seasons and I went back to the UK. And then it was like, it was a bit of a light bulb moment, and I was in teen and I'd been out there for quite a few years, and I came back to the UK. I actually quit doing seasons in teen because I had a business opportunity here, which was kind of too good to pass up. And then I got a little bit screwed over at the last minute, and it didn't work out for whatever reasons. And I went back to the mountains, which was incredible because I'd moved away from teen, which was a really big decision. Come back, lost this opportunity, and actually, it was Duncan and Sarah who own the Coup de Couchon. We're like, oh, I'm like, come back. We will give you a job literally tomorrow. Just get out of there. You've had a bad experience. Come back to teen. You know, you've got your mates here. We'll give you work. Get back, which is just an incredible like gesture and a perfect example of like the community that kind of is there in teen. And I'm sure in all ski resorts and mountain towns as well. Which allowed me to go back, and then I didn't want to carry on. Like at the time I was running bars, but it wasn't my own bar, it was someone else's business, and then I decided to finish the kind of journey, the Bayesian journey, which is a long one to be able to teach in France, so to get your license and your carte professionnelle to be allowed to teach in France. So after doing all of that and spending a lot of time doing it, I like had major injuries while I was training to become an instructor. I like heli lifted off the mountain after fracturing my spine and stuff, and during one of the exams. And so it was quite an emotional journey. And eventually when I got the CARP Pro, that was a huge achievement for me. Probably one of the biggest achievements of my life, I'd say, because I didn't go to university. I didn't go through that process of studying for like 3 full years to get a degree in that. I'd imagine it's a similar kind of sense of achievement. And then the decision to kind of leave that this winter was a really big one. And coming into this winter, like I had a wobble in terms of like, you know, what am I doing? Like how am I going to deal with not being in the mountains this winter? Because it's the first time in a very long time that I hadn't been there.
Is it, I guess, that once you've invested heavily in something, it's not just a profession. I guess it becomes part of your identity, perhaps.
Absolutely bang on. That word is like, that's one that I've explored a lot, and I've talked to with my family and with Ailey, my partner, a lot about making sure that you feel you have an identity. Well, you want an identity. Do you know what I mean? You want you want to be proud in what you're putting your energy and your time into, and you want to feel that that's valuable to you and to others that you're helping. And that is definitely about your identity. And yeah, you're completely right. You spend a lot of time and energy creating that side of your identity, and then to not be fully invested in it for a little while was a little bit scary. But then there's a realization that that can be one part of my identity, and I also have other things that I want to explore in terms of feeling like with the zero waste project that I'm doing a little bit for the planet and a little bit for the communities and building networks and stuff and helping people and finding a cool network of people to kind of work with. So you can have multiple identities that go into that, you know, which was, I guess, where I got to in the end, which is now why I feel really positive about both sides of my identity, if you like.
Yeah, they can kind of, I feel like I have a really weird analogy and I'm not sure it works yet, but I'm going to try it out.
I love an analogy. Go for it. So,
right. You know, when you've got a log fire and you've got a log on the fire and it's burning. If you put another log on above it, it draws the flames higher. So it actually makes the log below it burn better because you're drawing the air through. I don't know the physics or the chemistry of it, but you get what I mean. So like, I also think that you can have, if you're doing two projects, if you will, or two identities or two ways that you use your time, they can feed off each other, and you can burn better in both things you do. So like, one informs the other. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. I've got the bar, I'm doing this podcast. You know, I also do some consultancy and stuff. And I find that once I'm actually exercising different parts of my brain, weirdly, that muscle in my brain then switches on another part of my brain when I'm working on another thing, which is great.
That's a great analogy, and it's bang on. And I don't know whether it's age or, you know, over time. We spoke about it a little bit earlier. We kind of touched on it, that you don't want to feel like you're static or it's mundane, you know, the path that you're going down. And I don't know whether it's people who are a bit more creative or, but to making sure that you're challenging yourself all the time. And, you know, most people want to, you know, continue learning or pushing your own boundaries or experimenting and trying new things. And, you know, I think that's really important personally for me in terms of growth and feeling that, I guess that I'm challenged all the time, that I feel that I'm growing and that I'm learning about myself all the time. And for me, that's a real, it's a really important part of living for me.
Yeah, is that no? And for me too. And is that what I mean? Is that what when you were snowboarding? Is that what sort of led you to your? I don't know if it's an interest or your concern about climate change and working with POW. Was it about challenging yourself, or was it about asking yourself what you're doing here? Because I'll be honest with you, I love the mountains. I love being up here. There are times when I look around and I go, it's not very sustainable living on top of a mountain. I kind of ask myself questions about whether this is a good thing to be doing. Did you have similar thoughts, or was it a different kind of path to worrying about it?
Yeah, I think I became aware from being in the mountains for so long. I mean, like, teen is such a prime example of it, because of the glacier that's overlooking the whole of the town there, and it's right in your face, you know. And I remember I did seasons back in like 2001 in Val d'Isère, and that glacier was like so prominent, and just, you know, there was kind of no questioning it. You could ski it all year round, and that's what teen sold itself on, this resort that was a 360 day You know, you could ski every single day of the year through the winter and the summer. And seeing through the summer seasons there when being in teen of how much it had just disintegrated and how much it was disappearing. And it's so apparent. And actually when you stand at the top of the Grand Mot, the glacier there in Teen, and you look around, you can see like loads of hanging glaciers, like the ends of glaciers, which are literally just ice cliffs. That's all that's left now. You know, you see the valleys that they've receded up, the glacial valleys, and there's nothing left. They're just, it's so apparent. And not just the glacier, but, you know, I don't know whether it's you look back at things with rose-tinted glasses a little bit, but seasons used to be really scheduled, if you like. The way that the snowfall fell back when I started doing seasons, like 99, 2000, was the weather was almost the same every December, every January, every February. You know, it would start the snowfall, January would get super cold through to February, then we would start to get a bit of sunshine, then the spring snow at the end. But, okay, the snowfall would vary. Obviously, you get good winters and bad winters, and that's more weather as opposed to climate. But it started having, like, mad fluctuations. And I noticed it in teen for the last 10 years, where in January, where it's meant to be super cold, it would be plus 12, plus 13 degrees one day. And then the next day down to like minus 18 degrees. These crazy fluctuations, which just shouldn't be there in those times of the year. And it was happening more and more and more frequently. I'd seen Protectile Winters had started a kind of UK side of it, because it obviously started with Jeremy Jones in America. And the UK had started their own project and organization. And I just emailed them and just said, look, I'm based in the mountains. I'm out here. Is there anything I can do to help? Can I get involved in any way, really? From noticing what was going on around me in the environment that I lived in and love, and then also, as we just spoke about then, kind of taking on a bit more responsibility in your life and challenging yourself a little bit and realizing, yeah, I'd like to use some of my spare time to volunteer and help these causes that I feel that are quite important to me. I guess that's how it kind of started with them.
I read there was an article doing the rounds. I think it was a Telegraph article. It caused a bit of furore here in the sense that I don't know if you read it, but it was about, I think the line was, it's a good thing that ski resorts aren't opening.
Yeah, I read that one.
And obviously the community here was like, how dare you? This is our livelihood, which I understand. And I'm not making that point. But I guess I wanted to ask about the environmental impact of a ski resort, because, you know, I've been here since mid-November and the snow cannons have been on a lot and they're firing out a lot of water. I don't know it just made me think, how bad to the environment are ski resorts? And I guess I don't know what the question is. Should we stop living in ski resorts, I guess, is the question. I mean,
that's a huge question, isn't it? And that kind of comes along with whenever you talk about the environment and the planet, questions along the lines of, I mean, if you're going to talk to someone, engage people about this conversation, and you're a snowboard instructor or you own a bar in the mountains, you know, you're going to expect a question coming back like, well, hang on, you say that you're interested in this, but you live in a really damaging environment, you know, in terms of to the planet. But so, yeah, it's really tricky. Like, as it stands, ski resorts, yeah, they mess up the ecosystem there. They invade in natural environments, in terms of wildlife and things like that. And yeah, the way that the resorts are powered and everything like that is a huge drain, and it's not sustainable the way that they operate at the moment. what I kind of look at it is that really the things that need to change are higher up. They're more systemic, if you like. And I don't think we should be looking individually particularly and saying, okay, you can't get on an aeroplane, you can't go snowboarding, you can't, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that to everyone. You all have to make these personal sacrifices, then everything's going to be better, because it won't, to be perfectly honest. It's not enough. In terms of that, the changes need to be coming from higher up. They need to be coming from governments. They need to be law, you know, they need to be things that are changed, and they are the law, and that's how things need to be changed. Money, where money is invested, you know, money talks, really, and that it's not getting invested into fossil fuel companies and things like that, but companies that are thinking about better ways of sustainably living in this, on this planet going forward. But ski resorts do need to make huge changes, you know, and if you look at things like in America at the moment, ski resorts are struggling to get investment from banks and insurance companies if they're wanting to extend resorts and wanting to build new infrastructure like lift systems and things like that. They're not getting the money lent to them from banks anymore, because the banks are like, hang on, you operate at 1,200 meters. In 20 years, 30 years, you're not going to be able to operate. You won't have snow. So you're asking us for a loan of millions of dollars to pay back over 30 years. You're not going to be able to sell tickets for the lifts in 30 years because the snow line won't be there. It will be much higher up. You know, so it's going to affect the ski industry for sure, hugely. And the lift companies, the towns that operate the resorts need to think about how they do it, and need to think about doing it more sustainably. The businesses that operate within the towns need to think about that. The people who travel there need to think a little bit more about how you can travel there. And you can make changes with your holiday, which don't have a huge impact, which in terms of impact on you, if you know what I mean, as the person going on a holiday, but do have a positive impact on sustainability in terms of like how you travel to the resort, when you're in the resort, how you operate within the resort, thinking about staying with a tour operator or someone like that who is doing things to help, is making changes in their practices, to think about being more sustainable as a business within those resorts. So it's difficult. I mean, I want to go snowboarding. And other people do. And it's not to say you can't take your family holiday every year, because you can't do that anymore. You can, but we need to make bigger changes around everything, and we need to be living a bit more of an examined life to try and help reduce that impact. But mainly the big thing, and the big thing that Protect Our Winters are trying to do, and you see it with Jeremy Jones and Protect Our Winters in America, is that he spends a lot of his time now in Congress. He spends a lot of his time trying to make systemic changes with the government about how corporations run in the countries. And that's really important. That's what Protect Our Winters, that's our like top kind of thing. We're trying to make change there on the bigger scale, which is going to make, you know, huge impact and huge positive impact on the way that we live our lives.
I think I'm totally sold up to what Protect Our Winters are doing. I think that what I find really interesting, especially in the States with the outgoing administration, is you mentioned that banks, so like big corporates like banks, on the one hand, are not investing in areas where they think there's going to be no return on their investment because of climate change. And then the other corporations are having free reign with the environment. And you're just thinking, surely if, you know, a bit like we were saying at the top of the call when we were talking about, there's nothing like finance to really show you what's going on.
Oh, for like sure.
That shows, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's amazing because you look at actually what the recent pandemic has done. And if you talked to someone a year ago about reducing the flights worldwide, about the amount of flights that have been reduced during COVID and the pandemic. People are just saying it's not possible. It's impossible. We can't do that. You can't just suddenly reduce people's travel. It's not possible. But all of a sudden, when something comes in that you have to do it, it gets done. You know, it's really, it's a perfect example of systemic change that if, you know, if governments and corporations decide to make those changes, it will happen, you know, and money is a huge driver in it. It's a huge driver in it. If that's why now is a really important stage for, I mean, if I'm looking locally in the UK government, but all around the world, an opportunity now. We've hit rock bottom with this pandemic in terms of the economy has taken a huge hit. You know, people have sadly lost jobs and businesses, but we've got to rebuild. And there's a huge opportunity now to make sure that rebuilding, that money that gets reinvested into the economy via the government, goes into good, sustainable, green practices. So, and rebuild into renewable energy and things like that, and invest and create jobs in those areas, you know? So upskill people, get them skilled in these areas, get them working in these areas, create more jobs, put money back into the system, but do it in a sustainable manner and build up through that. And there is talk, you know, and the government are talking in the right terms at the moment about it, but they need to aim way higher with what they're talking about, you know, for us to really start to see that change. So that there is a light at the moment and a real opportunity to do that. And it's interesting to see how customers, like people, I think our generation and the generation underneath us are now a bit more environmentally conscious and aware. And the way that they're starting to spend their money is pushing towards, they're looking about, you know, buying organic food, or they're looking at businesses that, if they're going to buy their snowboard jacket, they're looking at businesses that run on a more sustainable project and program. And the money is starting to be pushed that way. And it's amazing that when you see the money start to go that way, the other organizations are like, oh, people are spending money with, why are they spending money with those guys? Oh, because of their environmental practices and their views on sustainability. Okay, then maybe we need to start producing our garments like that. You know, because that's where the money's going. So then they get a cut of that money too, you know.
I think that's really interesting. I think I agree with you that at the higher level there needs to be big systemic changes, but and I'm firm, and I think you'd agree in terms of what Powell says, is that actually you can, you know, as a consumer, if you start making that change, people do, it does follow. I mean, yeah, it's I think consumers do have that power with their wallet. The power you have with your wallet is huge.
I don't think people know enough about that. So like I've quite recently changed my banking to a bank called Triodos, who are an incredible bank, and they're all of their, so people don't, and it's not, I'm not saying this is anyone's fault, but it's just not on the radar, and it wasn't on my radar at all either, until I learned about this. But you're putting all this money into banks, so whether it's business money or, and then obviously that money gets reinvested or pension schemes or whatever it might be. And if that money is being put into good, sustainable businesses to help them grow, then you know, all of a sudden it multiplies and it grows. Whereas you go with a bank that are putting their money into fossil fuels, that are putting their money into companies that don't really have a conscience about these things, then that's helping those industries grow, which is not the way or the direction that we want to go down. So yeah, you're totally right. It's like people's money and their spending and where their money is can have a huge, huge impact on it. But, and I don't think people are educated enough about it, not through anyone's fault, just that we haven't, you know, talked about it enough.
Awareness. Maybe. Yeah. It's true. Actually, I'm in the process of moving some money to Triodos Bank, actually. I've got all the application forms.
Brilliant.
It's a really, really good bank. And it, like you say, it's a different subject, not climate change, but on the Black Lives Matter stuff that happened this summer, I listened to Zadie Smith talking, the author, and she made a really good point. She said it's all well and good people, you know, blacking out their Instagram for Blackout Tuesday,
yeah,
and showing their support. But she's like, you know, what I really care about is where are these people going to send their schools? Are they going to pay for private education? Are they going to campaign? Where's the actual sort of investment in their time and their money going to be spent as they grow older? And it's, I think it's very true. It's, you know, one thing I really do love about POW is they are building an awareness and they are raising awareness. And I just hope that there can be some conversion from that awareness to, for what I don't know how you want to define real change, but for me, it's that it is starting to put money, people putting money in banks that are going to invest in renewable resources and things like that. So that's for me is a nice, hopefully a nice step that we can make as a community. In the
yeah, mountains. For sure. And there's all different levels of it. I mean, we have, as POW, an ultimate aim of what we're trying to do, which is like at the top level and making systemic change and things like that. But it starts with activism at the bottom, like, you know, grassroots, getting the awareness out there, like you said, and getting people talking about it in resort and getting people interested in it, you know. And actually the reception we had in teen and the journey that I had in teen with POW was actually incredible. So as the role I kind of started there was what they call a winter guardian. So it's like a local activist or rep, I guess, to kind of spread the word. And it was in its, POW UK was really in its infancy. And so we kind of didn't really know what the role entailed. We had like a guideline of it, but it was kind of like, get out there and let's see what we can do and what role we can get going in the community. And the idea is to get the word out there, get people talking about it, get businesses involved in it who are interested in it, run some events that, you know, not forgetting that what, you know, POW is built around outdoor enthusiasts. So people who love the outdoors and love snowboarding, skiing, mountain biking, trail running, whatever it might be. So to, you know, equally make it fun and not forget that we love doing these things. So that's how like the bank slalom and the rail jam that you guys were doing, which were awesome events, and it gave us a platform, didn't it, to talk about Protect Our Winters, to tell people what it's about,
yeah,
but still have fun and kind of have a good time and not just talk at people, if you like. And so we started with those kind of events and we were really successful. Like the rail jams with you guys were amazing, the turnout was incredible, it was so much fun. And then the whole community comes from that, and then towards the end of the season that same community came to the back slalom, and that is building each year with momentum. And so we've been doing it for 3 years, I think, trying to create some awareness in teen. And then this last winter, resulting in what we were doing around resort, I had an email from teen development, who are the people who kind of operate the Lagon and the sports center there, employ a huge amount of people in team, like the operation managers, if you like, of team. They emailed me and said, we would like to speak to POW about how we can become more sustainable in resort, as team, going forward, which kind of blew my mind a little bit. I was like, wow, that just from this little us doing a few fun events and getting people involved and talking about it and working with you guys at Box Bar and doing the bank slalom, we've actually, the teen as a resort now wants to engage with us and almost on a consulting level of, you know, can you help us get better at doing more sustainable practices, which in a short period of time was amazing.
I actually did not know that. So that's blown my mind a little bit, and quite frankly, it's made my day. That's that's amazing. They've contacted.
We had a great meeting last year. With Ralph.
Wait a minute. Maybe I did know this. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Go on. Tell me more. Sorry.
We had a meeting with. We went and spoke to them, and it was incredible. And now they're in touch with Protect Our Winters France and Protect Our Winters UK, and going forward they're going to have a strong relationship in terms of trying to help them become more sustainable across the board on how they operate as a resorting team, which is cool. And it shows that exactly what Power's about is trying to engage like-minded people who enjoy, in our case and team, the mountains and snowboarding and skiing or like touring, whatever it might be, climbing, ice climbing, trail running, whatever you, floats your boat out there while you're out there. Engaging all of those people, bringing them together, and then realizing actually that's quite powerful. We can make some pretty cool changes, and it's a perfect example to me of what we can do. And so now this at the moment we're currently going to be launching that. I'm taking a role as like a community rep organizer, and we're going to be releasing more reps all around Britain in bigger cities, Teen, Morzine, some key places, and we're gonna try and help these reps get out there and replicate the same thing that we've done in Teen, really, in like Edinburgh, Manchester, London, Liverpool, Cardiff. You know, carry on with what we're doing in Teen, Morzine, and we're gonna try and put all these little seeds and just get them out there and get them growing and see what happens with that, which is really exciting, really cool.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's really, I mean, yeah. Generally, but sounded, yeah, that's generally brilliant.
Just as you said that and smiled, the sun came out on your face. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's an absolutely gorgeous day here. I mean, it is December, so maybe I shouldn't be cheering that such a nice day. But exactly, where's the snow? But no, we have had plenty. Dare I ask what's going on with Banks Island this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of play by ear a little bit. Obviously, COVID has quite a big say on it. And what happens, something we haven't even really touched on as well, is Brexit also has a bit of a play on that as well in terms of what happens after that. But all the intentions are, yeah, that we run it, obviously. And the Banks Island's gone really well. And we've decided that we want to try and grow it into almost a festival week, which is what we had planned for last winter. But obviously the winter season got cut short because of COVID. So we're going to try and bring in a bit more, not just the Banks Island, but have a whole week of things going on around town, whether it be art exhibitions with people who focus on kind of art to do with climate change or the environment, or photographers, a night of kind of people coming to speak, whether that's team development and telling us what they're trying to do to make the resort a little bit more sustainable, or pro athletes who are involved with Protect Our Winters. Just, you know, artists, people who are interesting to sit down and listen to and have conversations. So we were thinking about doing that. Some movie nights, which we did at the Box Bar last year, which was really successful with some short films. There's some incredible short films out there from Protect Our Winters and other companies like Patagonia and Picture, and people like that are banging out some incredible short films based around, obviously, like snowboarding and skiing, but addressing climate change and things. Just awareness and fun stuff going on around town. That was kind of the idea, and make it more into a festival and then ending with the Banks Slalom. And we did, last year, we did the community build. So we kind of, we don't want to use any machines to build the course, so we did it all by hand, and that was really rad. So everyone turned out the day before, we brought beers and you were there, you know what the vibe was, and people
were
kind of
trying to ride it, but it was a 8:30 in the morning or something. It was just we went up on it was really icy,
rock solid.
I was with Jonesy, Will Hughes, Kenny, like, you know, seasoned pros. And I was like, this is a death trap. And it was because of my lack of talent, and I got down to the end. And they were just like, bloody hell. And I was like, thank God you found that hard, because that really killed me.
That's brutal. In the morning, it is brutal. You definitely need it to soften up, for sure.
Yeah.
It's a cool event, man. They're really popular around the world, and in most resorts now run them because they're really accessible. So obviously when it's like when it's bulletproof like that, it's hard, but once it's softened up, as long as you can turn left and right on a snowboard, you can get down it. So, you know, it's not like a freestyle competition where maybe people would be a bit daunted to go into the park or something like that, or a free ride competition. But it's like, come in, build it. And the rad thing that happened last year, which I need to document with photos on the next one, is that people started building. So if you don't know about bank slalom, it's basically just a series of banked turns. And so you have to build these banks up by hand over the day that we're building them. And people were building a bank, and then they kind of took it as their bank. So it was like they would work on that one bank all day, and it was like their thing. So that out of like the 25 turns, that's their bank, that's their turn. Like they took so much pride in it and shaping it and building it. Mm. And like next year we need to document, kind of do a little video and footage of each person and maybe name banked the corners, like Jesse's turn or whatever it might be.
Yeah,
like,
that's wicked.
Because it was really cool. Like, people got real protective over it.
Yeah, and it's great. Now, I remember there'd be a few people up there with their shovels just making sure that there was no damage going on as people came by. It was great. I loved it. There were a few that were very – I remember the course. There were a few that were quite whippy. It was great. It was such – you know, picking up on what you're saying about it being accessible, I would not consider myself by any means an accomplished snowboarder. And I was competing, and it felt great to be going down with everyone, you know, from absolute pros to people – that just, you know, like myself, that don't really know what they're doing on the mountain half the time. So it was great. It was a great event.
It really epitomized community and bringing people together, which is ultimately what Protect Our Winters is about. And it was great. Like the first one we did was pretty emotional. Like the evening we did the presentation and we had a band on and stuff. Mm. And like I had people coming up to me and like choking up, kind of people who've been in team for years saying, dude, that was like, we've needed something like that in team for a long time. It was such a rad day. Mm. And, you know, the community spirit around the whole day and people up at the top having a drink and tunes are playing.
Yeah.
And feeling, knowing that you could either go in and really try and win it or just go in and take part and just have a crack. Mm. Yeah, it was quite emotional at the end of it that it had such a big response in terms of people just enjoying it and getting involved. And it was again, it was a success of everyone. It wasn't one person or a handful of people. Actually, everyone built it, everyone made it happen. Mm. And that was the cool thing, kind of the community of snowboarding, I guess, kind of shone through on it, which was rad.
That was Owain George, myself chatting to Owain. What a nice guy, what a really cool guy, and just fully involved in trying to make this place a better place to live, make the world a better place to live, and I'm totally down with that. Do go check out his new venture, his zero waste mobile refill center. It looks amazing. Check it out. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation and you feel inspired to do some good and feel good about what you are and who you are. So yeah, thanks for listening again. Do like and subscribe if you enjoy it, and I'll be back soon with more Mountain Tales.